Page down. Very good. Good evening, everybody. My name is Phil Stern. I have the honor of representing the board in this round of negotiations. I would like to just add to the articulate and cogent words that we've heard so far, especially with regard to the process of negotiations that Ms. Olosky was referring to. The only thing I would add to that is that indeed the process of negotiations actually goes on well after the ink is dried on the contract that has been arrived at, and it continues throughout the year, even before the process has to start anew after the 3 or 4 or 5 years goes by. I'm talking about salary guide structure and increment cost. It's been referred to before. Mr. Malloy referred to it before. What I'd like to do this evening is just accentuate the fact that as we begin bargaining, the first thing that we do is we take a snapshot at the amount of money that is being expended in total in all the salaries of the collective bargaining agreement. And that snapshot that the union and the board come to an agreement on is known as the scattergram. And that is the key important first step in negotiating, especially in terms of the economic negotiations, to determine exactly how much money we are talking about. So from that scattergram, that is simply the pool of money. We then deal with what's known as the salary guide and structuring the salary guide. And the salary guide, as the slide indicates, is a chart which pinpoints how much a school district pays its staff. And just to look, our salary guides in New Jersey are almost exclusively measuring time served in the district and degrees earned. So looking at this salary guide structure, even though it's a little bit hazy, you can see that the very far left column is the number of steps on the guide, and then moving across the guide, what we see are the columns which indicate degrees earned from bachelor's, in this particular sample guide, what you see is bachelor's plus 15, all the way over to a doctoral degree. This is almost exclusively the only type of guide that is used in New Jersey, and the reason being that it is a very predictable plan for both the union and the board in terms of determining where people are going to go from 1 year to the next. It is not, however, the only type of measurement that we can have when it comes to salaries. Salary guides are not the only way it goes. You may have recalled that in the last few years, the Newark School District experimented a little bit with salary ranges where faculty could voluntarily adopt not a guide structure, but a range of salary structure. And that has been something that's been talked about. Nationally, there are a number of variations on the theme of salary guide. But this is our structure. And you know, the good news, as we said before, it's predictable. When a new contract is forged, members can immediately go to the salary guides that have been agreed upon, and they can find out exactly where they will be. And our business office can do the same thing and determine where things are on the guide. So it is a predictable measure of income. One of the challenges of a salary guide, however, is in what is known and what Mr. Malloy referred to as the cost of increment. And the cost of increment, just to hone down a little bit more on what Mr. Malloy was saying, is simply how much it costs for a member to move from one step on the guide in 1 year to the following step in the next year. And the measurement of all that movement from one step to the other is what's known as the increment cost. In New Jersey, we have contracts whose increment costs, that is, the amount of money it costs to go from one step to the next, 1 year to the next, can be as low as 1%, which it is in some school districts and in some guides, to as high, well, in Clinton Township, the teacher's salary guide has an increment cost of 2.7%, as I believe Mr. Malloy showed. Now, why is that an issue one way or the other? Well, it's an issue because 2.7% means, remember that pool of money we talked about before, the scattergram has to be increased by 2.7% in order to allow all members to move on the guide. And in terms of negotiating in 2018, that number represents a number that may or may not be close to what the settlement figure would be anyway, in an age where we have the 2% salary cap, et cetera. Conversely, it's helpful just to know that for those salary guides, let's say, that have a 1% increment cost, a settlement of 2%, hypothetically, simply means that everyone moves on the guide. It only costs 1% to move on the guide, right? And then there is an additional 1% of monies to increase those guide steps. The difficulty that we face with a 2.7% increment cost is that there is no, if we were only settling on the cost of increment, there's no improvement to the amounts of money in each of those steps. And that creates a real challenge for the union, and it creates a real challenge for the board. Now, why is the, there are a series of questions here that I need to be paying more attention to, I apologize. Why is the increment cost so high? Well, one of the craziest things that happens with salary guides is that over time, what are known as bubbles can be created. There can be larger steps in between certain steps on the guide more than others. And over the years, those bubbles can create increment costs and create a higher salary guide. So that's one of the ways it happens. Also, it's a real challenge to change a salary guide that has a high increment cost. It takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of commitment to do it. It can be done, but it takes time and it takes a lot of work. How can it be corrected? Lowering the increment cost one way to lower it, of course, would be to change the structure. Do ranges that I referred to before. Another approach is to lower the amount of money between the steps on the guide. Sometimes that is accomplished by increasing the number of steps on a salary guide. All of these options create challenges within both the union and the board in terms of its membership, what people are expecting. I mean, one of the things that our community needs to understand is that there are members of associations who have been in the school district for a number of years, who have kept their eye very carefully on the salary guide with expectations about getting to a certain point. If all of a sudden the guide is changed and revamped, et cetera, that can create real political and economic issues with regard to expectations on the part of people with regard to those salary guides. So the high cost of the salary increment, the movement from one step to the next, is a very large challenge. And admittedly, a 2.7% increment cost for the teacher guide is a high increment cost. With regard to the current negotiation status, negotiations began, as Mrs. Grant was talking about, in December of 2016. We've all worked very hard to try to settle a contract. We're not there yet. And so on February 1, 2018, the board filed a notice of impasse with the Public Employment Relations Commission. And as has been described before and emphasized and assured, quite frankly, when Mr. Gagliardi was talking about the different phases of negotiations, impasse doesn't stop negotiations. It is just another method of negotiations where the parties have come to a point where we need some help. We need somebody to come in to help us out. And that's where we are now, and that's what the board looks forward to, and no doubt the association is ready for March 14th when we'll be meeting with our mediator. Just a point, oops, how do I go back? Page up? Yeah. One of the things that was emphasized in this presentation is that impasse is by no means a punitive step. It is a recognition that after a fairly long period of time, December of 2016 to February of 2018, we want to try to move things forward and get the contract accomplished. Okay. Is the impasse document available to the public? Everything that is filed with the Public Employment Relations Commission is public and can be looked at. They are publicly available by law, and those documents are going to be posted on the district website by the end of business tomorrow, correct? The overview of the addendum, the impasse, when the party or parties file for impasse, there's a document that the Public Employment Relations Commission furnishes. You can type it all in and you can just file that document. Plus, you can put in an explanation of what got us to that point. The board did file an addendum to our impasse document just to explain to the Public Employment Relations Commission how we got to this point, and it's spelled out in that document. The CTEA signaled its interest in bargaining in September of 2016. The board immediately responded, indicating that while it was certainly interested in beginning negotiations as well, the board was to wait until its organizational meeting in January before it could form its negotiations team. You heard that in the presentation about how the board prepares for negotiations. In October of 2016, the board hired a labor attorney. The board's labor attorney contacted the NJA Uniserv office at that point, and there were many, many communications from yours truly to the NJEA Uniserv office in advance of those negotiations with the hope that we could have as productive and expedient negotiations as possible. There were some changes in that particular position that is described in the addendum, and so there were more conversations about how best to facilitate some of those changes. There was also an effort by the board to, in light of a recent history of prolonged negotiations, as I was walking in tonight, I heard it at another meeting, someone making the point that in their years as a teacher here or as an employee here in Clinton Township, they had never ratified a contract before the contract expired. And that's known to all of us, and that's recognized, and it's something that we hoped to deal with. And so the board invited a meeting of a more small group nature of the association before negotiating itself, just to talk about some of those issues that may be obstacles in the way of a more expedient and productive negotiations. There were lots of entreaties to the association in that regard, and as the slide indicates, it just took a long time to get responses, etc. There was data that was requested. This is the chronology of what happened. That is kind of a synopsis of what is included in the impasse addendum. that the information was exchanged. In December of 2016, we exchanged ground rule proposals. Finally, in January of 2017, after the organization meeting, negotiation committee was assigned. Immediately thereafter, a settlement offer was transmitted to the association, and the board did not hear back with regard to that for quite some time. So there were changes again in representation issues, and as I just finished mentioning, the board's efforts to try to engage the association in a conversation that has been now termed as a core values ran into some issues because the association insisted that it wanted to negotiate. The association's position was that the invitation to engage in a conversation about core values was an imposition upon the negotiation process, and therefore an unfair labor practice was filed. Thankfully, the parties ultimately got together, settled that unfair labor practice, did meet and talk about core values, and did in fact engage, start negotiations as well. The unfair labor practice was settled. When you settle an unfair labor practice charge, basically the parties agree to do what they wanted, you know, to do, which is get together and negotiate. And talk about some of the issues that we had talked about before as far as core values. Then as far as as far as settlement agreement, okay, that was fine. So as far as overall background, we have met seven times since December of 2016. Association has canceled three meetings. We believe we've canceled two meetings. My fault, our cancellations were my fault. We had Saturday meetings. The bottom line is that while we have met, there are topics that are still outstanding. We've not yet been able to finally resolve those topics, and we sincerely believe that the introduction of a neutral third party into this process will assist us in getting to the point where we'll have a memorandum of agreement. As far as question, how did you want to deal with the questions from the public? Should I just keep going? Just these questions? Yeah, okay. So some of the questions that we have received, did the CTEA file an unfair practice? What was the outcome? Are the findings public? Yes, there was an unfair labor practice filed in April, alleging that we were refusing to negotiate. We met with a representative of the Public Employment Relations Commission, and we settled at that time, as I just finished saying. The findings are public and can be found on the website at the conclusion of tomorrow. Why does a mutual agreement between the board and the CTEA always take so long? One of the observations that I would make to additions to Mr. Gagliardi's articulate introduction to this process is that we are living and negotiating in a time where there is a combination of mandatory topics for negotiations and at the same time legislative incursions into those mandatory topics. For example, when Mr. Reiser was talking about Chapter 78, health benefits and costs of health benefits, et cetera, many, many aspects of health benefits are mandatory topics of negotiations. Overlaying on top of that was a legislative enactment saying, this is what you are all going to do. And at the same time, that law saying, this is what you're going to do, sunset and went away, saying, all right, everybody, you had this law, You had this requirement legislatively, now you negotiate. That topic, health insurance, which clearly is a topic that is causing great complexity throughout this country, the way that has evolved has certainly caused negotiations to lengthen, to become more complicated, et cetera. So there are certainly a number of factors in addition to that, as I believe we heard at the very beginning, this is a very complicated task. Why does the administrator's contract always go so much faster than the CTEA contract? Very simply, many fewer members in the Administrators Association. The CTAA has less than 10 employees. CTEA has approximately 206 members. So by its very nature, it's going to take a little bit shorter to do. Can the board and the CTEA negotiate in public? If the board and the CTEA agreed that they were going to negotiate in public, we could negotiate in public. We have not come to an agreement with that. I am unaware of many, if any, locals in the state of New Jersey that negotiate in public. There are other states nationally, however, that are mandated by law to negotiate in public. As an aside, I have never participated in a presentation of this nature as we are tonight, and this is not negotiating in public, but it is a pleasure to be part of a process that hopefully just illuminates to our association members, our community, our board members, and everybody here just what a process that we don't talk very much about is in fact all about. What does it mean when people say teachers are working without a contract? Are teachers getting paid? Will they get retroactive pay? Working without a contract simply means that the contract has expired and the new terms and conditions of employment that will eventually be agreed upon have not happened yet. It does mean that all employees continue to get paid at the rates that were included in the contract at the time of expiration. So rest assured that while neither the board nor the association are happy about not settling, no, everyone continues to get paid at the previous rates. Why has the board not been vocal about negotiations and updating the community on its status? Early on, when we agreed upon our ground rules, one of the key ground rules was up to impasse, we would not be discussing these matters in public. And even we're in impasse now, and the board is committed to making sure that the terms that are on the table, the items that may be still in need of resolution are confidential. Why doesn't the board tell the community what the teachers are asking for? Same thing. We're not sharing any of that information to our public because we made an agreement that we would not do so. What are the benefits to the board to prolong negotiations? There's a bunch of words on that slide. The simple answer is none. Why has the board canceled so many negotiations meetings? Again, I take full responsibility for that. I had a couple of times that I had to cancel. Things happen. Let people know about that already. As far as the core values, the association leadership and the board leadership and the central office leadership had a few wonderful meetings just to talk about a list of agreements about how we do business moving forward. And that was frankly one of the considerations early on in the process that we were hopeful would inform this process in a more positive way. There was an agreement to abide by a set of core values. They are listed in the in this presentation, They have to do with active, empathic listening, appreciate each other's perspectives, commitment, honesty, integrity, joint statements, respect, seeking to build trust, time, and working collaboratively. The board is no less committed to the letter and spirit of those core values now than it has ever been. And why does the board only hire one labor attorney? It's fiscally responsible to do so. It is the standard way of doing things. The board just thinks that that's all that's really required for the contract. The last thing I will say is that one of the joys of doing collective bargaining as an attorney is that in addition to bargaining, I also do a lot of litigation. I can never say to a client that I can guarantee a result in a litigation. I can never say to a client that we're going to win this case. I guarantee you we're going to win this case. Any lawyer that says that, you should not listen to them. You cannot make that prediction. I can always predict, however, we will settle a contract because we always settle the contract. All parties do. So thank you for your time.
This includes our presentation this evening. Tonight, the presentation reviewed why a board negotiates. It defined the collective bargaining process, its pros and cons, the laws that drive the collective bargaining process, who represents the board, the stages in negotiations. We also provided an overview of how the board prepares to negotiate, those things that the board considers before negotiations begin, and the major financial considerations that the board takes into account before negotiations start. Our expert in healthcare from Brown & Brown spoke about the challenges of rising healthcare costs that are presented to boards of education across the state. Mr. Stern, labor attorney for the Board of Education, reviewed salary guides, challenges to salary guides and our increment costs. He did very high level status and negotiations between the board and the CTA, and he did a high level review and answered some questions that we hear time and time again in the community. The board hopes that this presentation was helpful by providing clarity about the process and the current status. The presentation will be placed onto the district website along with the audio. By the end of the week, the board will publish a question and answer document on the main page of the district website. These questions will review the questions that were presented this evening, in addition to additional questions that are supportive in nature to this topic, and any additional questions that we hear this evening that we can answer legally. Lastly, the February issue of the Clinton Township Board of Education's update, a newsletter that is published 1 week after the board's monthly meeting. It'll serve to provide an overview of topics that were discussed and voted on by the board during the last meeting. Will also be released this week, and an overview of this presentation and links to this presentation and the Q&A will also be in that document. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank our experts this evening for participating, Mr. Vito Gagliardi, Mr. Brian Reiser, Mr. Philip Stern, for sharing their knowledge and expertise in their fields. In addition, I'd like to thank our administration, specifically Dr. Fiander, Superintendent of Schools, Mr. Ed McManus, School Business Administrator Board Secretary, Ms. Cheryl Zara, Ms. Debbie Krupp, Ms. Diane Hadley, for their support in supplying information pertinent to this presentation. For now, we will move on with the rest of the agenda of the meeting.
You should have taken me up on the offer when I offered the first time.
Thank you.
We're going to move the meeting on now to the report of the Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Fyander. Dr. Fyander, may we have your report, please?
Yes, enrollment stands at 1,269 students. We had suspension report as listed on the agenda of 11 students. We have a first reading for 6 HIV report tracking numbers and a second reading for 2. I would also like to publicly thank and congratulate Diane Cormican, the members of the Clinton Township Middle School, the parents, the families, everyone who participated in Friday night's Relay for Life. Not only did they raise over $41,000 this year, cumulatively over $302,000, but even more exceptional was the spirits that they raised in this room. It was just remarkable, and I have never experienced anything so moving, and I appreciate and applaud them for that effort. Thank you.
Thank you. Bless you. I'm looking for a motion, please, for action item 18SU023 to 18SU025.
So moved.
Mrs. Brooks, second, please. Mrs. Olowski, any questions for Dr. Fyander this evening? Seeing none, may we have a roll call?
Mrs. Brooks.
Aye.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky.
Yes.
Mrs. Redagula.
Yes.
Mrs. Brennan.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. I'd like to move on to open the floor to our first public comment section on agenda items only. To guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual, our bylaw limits comments to 3 minutes. We'll adhere to this bylaw. For everyone to be heard in a fair, consistent, and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is only for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This, too, is defined by our bylaw. The board will make note of any questions or comments that a member of the public will make at the microphone. If the Board of Education has an immediate answer to the question or questions, they will be answered at the conclusion of the public comment section. We will gather all questions. And to the extent that any action or research is warranted, it'll be addressed by the board president or the superintendent of schools as appropriate. No participant may speak more than once on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on that topic have been heard. If you'd like to address the board this evening, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 30 minutes.
Good evening.
Name, please.
I'm getting there. Good evening. My name is Christine Lodato, and I'm a fourth grade teacher at Round Valley. I also hold the honor of being the co-president of our education association. In December of 2017, I stood at this microphone and affirmed the Clinton Township Education Association desire to reach a fair settlement with the Board of Education. Over 2 months ago, we voiced our optimism that even with the board's attorney solely at the table, we could make progress. I spoke about how in September of 2017, the board requested to have core values meetings in which we attended on September 28th and October 5th in order to move the negotiations process forward. How we hoped those meetings would lead to a productive dialogue that would allow us to reach an amicable and mutually beneficial agreement. In December, I spoke about how our educators work very hard from early morning to late evening for the well-being and educational advancement of our children. And I spoke of our hope that the board would recognize our contributions by coming to the table to reach a fair settlement. Unfortunately, 2 months later and almost 18 months from our original request to negotiate, I realized I still spoke too soon. For now, in February 2018, our Board of Education continues to delay, deter, and disavow the process and their responsibility to this community and their employees. Earlier this month, the Board of Education communicated in a public statement their update on the negotiations process. In their statement, it says that the board has diligently worked to come to an agreement that would be mutually beneficial for the district and the members of the CTEA. I must say, we were perplexed. After all, to come to an agreement requires one to come to the table. To achieve a mutual beneficial agreement requires mutual participation by both parties. The board discusses multiple efforts to move negotiations forward. However, insisting on non-essential terms and conditions in order to even begin discussions is not in the best interest of our team nor our members. Our goal is to get the job done, not to comply to the board's constant and unyielding demand for ground rules and expectations. They write of the association owing them more hours of valued discussions. However, the association fulfilled the Park Settlement Agreement. They write of the association arriving late to meetings without notification. However, the association has the communications where we set an established time. And yes, we were on time. It's time for the board to stop misleading the public about our intention to get this job done. The CTA has not stalled our efforts to negotiate. We have not stalled our desire to reach an agreement. We seek movement. We seek resolution. Let's get this settlement done.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Chris Cosgrave. I'm a third grade teacher at Patrick McGarren School. I have been a proud member of this community for the past 27 years. However, the past 6 years have definitely been the most difficult. It's been hard to watch as we become one of those unhealthy school districts. I am embarrassed and a bit ashamed. I think the root of the problem lies in a lack of trust the community and the staff has for the school board. The board has been involved in a very public feud with town council for the past 5 to 6 years. This has become a fractured relationship, and honesty has often been in question. Towards the end of last year, we had 3 administrators resign. First, the superintendent resigned before she completed her first year. This was followed by the resignation of the technology director and then the resignation of the special ed director. All 3 were hired by the leadership of this board. All 3 left for neighboring school districts. To me, something doesn't smell right about that. The teachers, as you know, have been working without a contract, another year without a contract and a pay raise. This makes 4 out of the last 5 years the teachers have worked without a contract and a pay increase. I ask you to imagine what it would be like for your family to not have a pay increase for the next 4 out of 5 years. I would think that would be difficult for any family. How does ignoring these contracts help promote enthusiasm, create a positive environment, or show respect to the entire staff? It doesn't. Recently, the board sent a letter to the community stating that they were working diligently with the Teachers Association on a contract. If diligently was the case, you would be able to follow up with the 20, 30, 40 times that you have met in the past 12 months. The truth is, contract negotiations really haven't begun. An honest statement to the community would be that we have continued to neglect negotiations as we have done the past 6 years. And something that scares me is something that happened with this current board just in January. I have to admit, I'm an optimist, and I was optimistic in January when you reorganized that people would say, we need change. But I was shocked when I saw that in your reorganization meeting, the same leadership who has been unable to negotiate a contract in a reasonable and respectful amount of time with anyone is the same leadership you chose to go forward. I don't know when it ends. The message I got from that was, we don't care and we're not going to try. Please don't let that be the message of this great community and all these staff members. We need members of this board to step up and say, we are embarrassed too and we are ready to build relationships. And then, not through your words, but through your actions, begin to work to undo the damage that has been done. I would think many on this board share the embarrassment and the feelings that I have. We need a hero to step up and bring about change. Thank you.
My name is Stephanie Fletcher. You need my address, correct?
Yes, please.
31 Summit Court, Annandale. 2 years ago, I stood at this microphone and implored the board to come to a settlement with our teachers. I remember thinking there were extraordinary circumstances that both sides just needed to work through, and I was happy to see that you eventually reached an agreement. This past Tuesday, I learned that once again, there is a breakdown in contract negotiations when a board member presented the board's position at our Hunterdon County Democrat meeting. Why are we at this point again? I obtained a copy of the 8-page notice of impasse, the addendum, and as I read it, I started realizing that I've heard much of this before. For in a March 21st, 2016 statement during the last contract breakdown, the board accuses the association of delaying an agreement that the board so wants to reach. In their 2018 notice of impasse, the board once again asserts that the association is constantly delaying the process. While we've heard a lot about fake news and pre-existing conditions over the past year, I never thought my community would be reading the same accusations 2 years later. Because in 2016, something didn't make sense to me, just as it doesn't now. Why would our teachers want to delay the process? This is their salary, this is their livelihood, yet our board continuously discusses how the teachers delay the process. In the 2018 addendum, you condemn the association's conduct during Board of Education meetings and on social media, saying that it has been negative and aggressive. And I admit I have not been to that many board meetings, but I did go to their social media accounts to find out what exactly is negative and aggressive. And I was stunned. I saw pictures of our negative and aggressive teachers wearing their green shirts and smiling. I see pictures of those negative and aggressive posters. I see negative and aggressive teachers serving ice cream to our students. I'm always appreciative of people who step up and run for office. As a former Board of Education candidate myself, I understand the risk of placing oneself in the public spotlight. Mrs. Grant, this is the second time we are here. Other districts seem to manage settlements. Why can't ours? Maybe it's time for you to let someone else get the job done. After these past few weeks, after Sandy Hook and the amount of awful, awful incidents that have happened, I hate putting my kids on the bus or driving them to school. But we have amazing staff at the schools protecting them. I believe in Mrs. Ferry and Mrs. Caruso. They are taking care of my kids, not just their education, not just emotionally, but their safety. Our superintendent just went on about everything our teachers need to do and everything the school staff needs to do. They are there every day. We aren't. Sorry, got off topic. I want our teachers to have the best contract in the state. If there are limited resources, then we need to find the money. We need to ensure our next budget provides for that. In your statement, you say that you are determined to do right by our children, but that the district, by improving your relationship with the association. Our teachers do right every single day for every single student that walks through the doors. I appreciate all of you for serving on the Board of Education, but we do expect you to do right by our students and our community, and do the job you were elected to do. Thank you.
My name is Penny Perez McFadden. I'm a speech language specialist at the Round Valley School. I'm also co-chair of the association's negotiation committee. And just like my co-chair earlier this evening stated, this is a confusing situation to be in. I've been sitting at the table with the board's committee, and I'm sort of confused because we want to come to an agreement. We want this settled. And what I heard from your side tonight, you want the same thing. So I'm just asking, let's get to the table. Let's get it done. I don't understand why we can't do that. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Susan Rivers. I'm a fifth grade teacher, and I am a taxpayer in the township, and I live at 1 St. Andrews Lane in Annandale. I would like to start off with some of the questions I ask my students throughout the year. Let's start with the what questions. What goal or goals do you have for this year? What's the hardest you've ever worked? What was that outcome? What are you the most proud of? What made you feel successful? Was it difficult for you? Now, how about some why questions? Why should we teach with technology? Why do you need an education? Why is school so important? How about some of those thought-provoking questions that we all give our students? Why is copying a good thing? When should everyone say thank you? When is it nice to say thank you, but okay not to? How important are appearances? When is it okay to respectfully give your opinion, even if it differs from your teacher? And finally, how about those push thinking questions that all of the teachers give their students? Can you tell me more? Can you say why? Can you give me an example? How do you mean? Or why is that important? These are just a very small, short sample of questions that all of the teachers in every classroom in Clinton Township ask their kids. Here's a question the teachers of Clinton Township ask themselves. What is the role of a teacher today? I'm going to repeat that. What is the role of a teacher today? Well, you know what? The answers really depends on the day. Today, is my role that of a counselor when a student needs a shoulder to cry on or just listen to the problem consuming their thoughts for the day? Or will it be a safety officer, or God forbid, a protector of their life? Or maybe, just maybe today, I will be a teacher, just a teacher. A teacher who can focus on the math lessons, the reading lessons, the writing lessons, the science lessons, the social study lessons, etc., etc. Today, personally, I was a recess referee, a counselor, and a teacher. That was just me, just today. My final question is for the board. I would like to know what we, the teachers of Clinton Township, who give so selflessly to our students, have done to deserve the disdain, the contempt, the disrespect of some of the members of the Board of Ed. You can shake your heads. We're on this side. You guys are on that side. We're on this side. We see when you shake your head. That just proves my point, the disrespect. It's appalling. I have been in this district for 26 years. My children went through this school. It is not the same school district, thank goodness, when my kids were here. Do you have an answer, Board of Ed? For my
three minute rule, please.
For my hardworking, compassionate, kind, thoughtful peers sitting here with me tonight. Thank you.
Hi, Gina Hand, 16 Prescott Circle. On Friday, I had the pleasure of attending the Relay for Life here at the middle school. Even though this was my sixth year participating, I am still amazed by our kids, teachers, and community. A seventh grade student spoke about her mom who passed away from cancer less than a month ago. An eighth grade student received an award for individually raising $25,000 over the years she participated in the Relay for Life. The school received an award for becoming a top five fundraiser for the Relay. On this list are high schools and colleges. There are amazing things that we can do together. It is amazing how well our community can pull together for a great cause and how easily they can divide it with name calling and rumors. I'm a former board member, so it seriously hurts when you call the board members disrespectful. Saying that teachers are greedy, and there's a social media post out there that says that there are students at our school that are rude and disrespectful to staff, and that the staff here are not punishing them. These are things that I hear and see on social media and in the community. This is what I see. Fantastic kids who are more socially aware and accepting than I ever was at their age. Teachers and administrators working hard at all hours for our kids. I see it. I get emails at midnight from some of my kids' teachers. And the Board of Ed. I was on this Board of Ed. They volunteer countless hours, and I know that people say they know what they sign up for, but they don't. I had no idea what I was signing up for. I had no idea the countless hours. I had no idea the name calling. I had none idea of any of that. Some of my kids' teachers. This community, I grew up here. I went to Spruce Run, and I also went to Round Valley. I find that these schools are amazing and awesome. I love this community, it's beautiful, and I feel very safe. There are two teams in these negotiations. The only people who know what happens in these meetings are the people in them. Any information from other sources is hearsay and rumors. We do not tolerate when our kids spread rumors or name call. And why is it suddenly acceptable for adults to do it? The Board of Ed has not settled a contract. The union has not settled a contract. Let's ask both sides to work together. Let's support both teams that they do what's fair for our teachers and the taxpayers. We are a community, and I really want us to start acting like one. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. My name's Chris Rush. I live at 7 Wedgwood Drive in Annandale. The last two speakers kind of really spoke a lot about what I feel and what I see. I've been here 12 years. I have three children, 11th grader, 9th grader, and a 7th grader here at the middle school. All of my children have gone through this district. And when I arrived in 2005, I was excited and young and hopeful. And I have to tell you, the first 7 years of my experience here for my kids and my children and myself in this district, which I've been extremely involved in, and numerous ways in the schools, in the church, in the community, in my neighborhood, in these people's lives outside of school. They've been involved in my life and my children's lives outside of the classroom as well and in it. And like Gina said, I agree, Gina. This is a beautiful area. These are amazing teachers, amazing kids, amazing people. I know you all individually, or many of you individually, and I really do appreciate everybody's efforts and energies and the time given. This is not the district that I came into in 2005. And I understand that change is change and things have to change. And the world we live in, things have to change. You know, we didn't have two vestibules in all the schools when I came here in 2005, and we do now. And I know why we have them, and I'm grateful that we have them, and I'm grateful for the efforts and energies the board and the district has taken to protect our children. I'm here to speak tonight about my concern for the children. I'm concerned about the fact that we don't have a contract, and I'm concerned for all these amazing teachers, and I'm concerned about you all and the efforts you're giving and feeling like you're not getting what you deserve either. But I'm really, really concerned about our children. I'm concerned, especially since what happened last week, and I just want to say that there are things going on in our children's lives and in their minds and in their emotions that are, I feel, not being taken care of. I feel like academically things have changed in this district as well, and I've had three go through only 2 years apart, and what the first one received, the last one did not. And the majority of the teachers are the same. The majority of the teachers are the same. But what this school's district is providing has changed so much in so many ways that academically we've lost a lot. But more importantly to me is the emotion, and these kids' emotional states are not being taken care of. And we have 7th and 8th graders drinking heavily on weekends. We have 7th and 8th graders vaping and smoking pot. We have children and families in the younger schools that are not involved at all in our community, in our school district. They are just missing. They have no desire to want to be part of anything. The energies that I saw when I came in 2005, 2006, that I looked at and was in awe of, are missing. And I can honestly say I've been through it. Three children, 6 years, two years apart in age. I've seen it, I've lived it, I've been in it. I'm in the schools, I'm in the children's lives. I coach, I teach CCD, you name it, I've done it. I bagged a ShopRite. I'm telling you, I have seen it, and I'm promising you I'm coming as a mom, I'm coming as a volunteer, I'm coming as someone, I was a teacher. I'm seeing it, I'm hearing it. I coached 36 cheerleaders from the age of 11 to 14, and a majority of them are in the Clinton Township School Districts. I've been with them since they were 5 and 6, and I see them, and I hear them talking, and they talk to me. My children talk to me. My children's friends talk to me. They're still, I have boys that are in 11th grade, juniors, they're talking to me. Listen to me. Listen to me. Our children need more. I've seen the change in this district. It's happened over the last 5 or 6 years, and it is a slippery slope, and they need us. Thank you.
Kira Lawrence, 9 West Street, Annandale, New Jersey. My son, Kai, is in kindergarten. Sure thing. I'm taller than the last speaker. So I've been coming to Board of Ed meetings for most of the fall. Me or my spouse has been at pretty much every meeting this fall. And we are, as invested individuals, my son just started kindergarten, trying to understand the framework of this controversy that we seem to be witnessing. It seems to me, after several months of watching this process unfold, that we are, in fact, at a crossroads here in Clinton Township, in this district. I am grateful to everyone here because it is clear that everyone in the room cares about education. I think that's true of anyone who signs up to be a board member. I think that's true of anyone who signs up to be a teacher. I myself am an educator. I'm the daughter of a 5th grade teacher, lifelong elementary educator. So I now, after 6 or 7 or 8 months listening to these conversations, have some sense of the complexity, and I am grateful to have heard more about that complexity from the board's perspective earlier tonight. What I would say is that as a community of people who care about education, and all of us know that education is the cornerstone of building a successful life for any individual, right? We all acknowledge that that is true. So I guess my statement would be that we need to value that commitment to students, all of us. And we do. I think we do because of our very presence here. And so I think, you know, having myself been in higher education and having friction with the administration that works at the institution that I work on. I understand how easy it is to be frustrated by slights, by drawing lines in the sand, and that happens on both sides. And they pretty soon you're at a place where you don't even think you're talking the same language. And I guess what I would say is that in education and in our commitment to education, we need to seek to be allies, not adversaries. We need to find ways to have conversations. I understand that there are sort of deep wounds, and I've sort of heard that articulated at this very microphone. And I understand, being an educator myself, about how important respect is in terms of what you do and how motivated you feel to get up each day to go do the wonderful work that you do in classrooms with our children. And I think we all have to remember the importance of that role that teachers provide in our communities. And then we have to take that understanding of the importance of that role and try to work together to get to a different spot. And I realize now with greater clarity sort of the complexities that are unfolding in the wider world that put pressure on the board's decisions and the challenges that the board face. What I would say is that we should be trying to confront those complexities as a community rather than deciding that we're going to have to pass those on to somebody else to shoulder. And so I don't know whether that means broader political action in government, talking to the town council, getting involved in the federal government. But what I would say is that instead of us being adversaries, I think we need to try and be allies in this effort to build strength in our communities. Thank you.
Anyone else like to address the board this evening? Okay. Seeing none, I'd like to move on to the first recognition of the public. Same parameters and guidelines that I mentioned earlier before apply here. We will be limiting this part of our public comment section to 15 minutes.
Excuse me, Mrs. Grant, I'm sorry, yes. I have to do something, and I know this is out of order. You're the process guard. Before the teachers leave, because I know you all have places to go, I appreciate all your comments, but I feel compelled to say something. I've sat in this chair for 5 years, and as a board member, we're expected to take a certain amount of heat. That's our job. It's okay for us to sit here and listen to that because it's your job to tell us your feelings. When members of the public express their anger and sometimes vent their spleen, we can do that. And I'm going to sit there, I'm going to write it down, and I'm going to take it under advisement. However, what I heard tonight from an elementary school teacher was a direct attack on not the board as a body, but the board president as a person. And I see a lot of green shirts out there. You people are our friends, you are the educators of our children, and you gave this man a standing ovation. Ms. Hand talked about our community bonds that bind us, and she received tepid applause. I want you to go back and listen to the audio of that statement, and if you still think it's worth the standing ovation, maybe I overestimated it. I'm sorry. You guys have to leave. You have places to go. But that was something I've never heard in my 5 years. And it really disappointed me. It profoundly disappointed me. I'm sorry.
Don't be. Yeah, please don't be. Anyone else like to address the board? Seeing none, I'd like to move on to the report of our business administrator and school secretary, Mr. McManus, sir.
Very briefly, the books are in good order, fine order, and the next board meeting is on March 19th with the budget to be submitted to the tentatively to be submitted to the county superintendent of schools on March 20th. There has been legislation that potentially could change that, but right now we're not expecting any modifications in state aid. So just wanted to mention that's when it is working.
Thank you, Mr. McManus. Looking for motion, please, for action item 18BA026 through 18BA029.
Motion.
Motion, Mrs. Olasky, a second, please.
Second.
Second, Dr. Foy. Any questions for Mr. McManus this evening? No, seeing none, may we have a roll call, sir?
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes, but I have to abstain on 18BA 026 executive session minutes.
Mrs. Olasky.
Yes.
Mrs. Redagata.
Yes.
Mrs. Brennan.
Yes.
Mrs. Brooks.
Yes.
Mrs. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. Moving on to the reports of our committee, we have three committees. We'll start off with Facilities and Finance. Mr. Kevin Malloy is the chair of that committee. Mr. Malloy, may we have your committee's report, sir?
Yes, the Finance and Facilities Committee met on February 13th. It is budget season, so that took up the bulk of the meeting. The budgets, preliminary budgets, are due on March 20th, with the state aid numbers typically coming out just in time on March 15th. So a lot of work went into that. We also talked, and I alluded to this earlier, we talked about maintaining facilities. As we see, we have 20 items to move tonight, some of which are very pertinent. So I'll go through some of the quick ones for you. Obviously, the payment of bills, which we can't get away from. Travel and graduate course approval for continuing education for our teachers, some transportation issues, some minor grant acceptance, four items related to compliance with various student IEPs. The big items tonight, you'll notice a very large number, $700,000, for various improvements. They are notably specific areas of air conditioning improvements to Round Valley. It is noted as phase one. The implication being is there will be more than one phase. To parents and teachers, we hear you. We are going to redo the PA system in Round Valley. So parents and teachers, we can hear you. We are going to be replacing the Airedale system at PNG. And we will be replacing the stage behind us at CTMS so that when Mr. Hill or anyone else does a production, the students will not fall through the floor. Additionally, there is $80,000 going from the maintenance reserve related to climate control upgrades at Round Valley schools. Obviously, and I'll just make a brief final statement on this, the maintenance of these facilities is a big part of what we do in this committee. It's finance and facilities, and making sure that these buildings not only are up to code and safe for our teachers, our staff, administrators, and students, but actually comfortable is a big part of what we're trying to do here. So with that, I seek a motion on FA, I believe it's 126 through FF, or excuse me, FF 126 through FF 145.
Thank you, Mr. Malloy. May we have a second, please?
Second.
Second, Mrs. Redagata. Any questions for Mr. Malloy this evening? Seeing none, may we have a roll call?
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky.
Yes.
Mrs. Redagata.
Yes.
Mrs. Brennan.
Yes.
Mrs. Brooks.
Yes.
Dr. Foy.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you, sir. Moving on to the report of our second committee this evening. Personnel. Ms. Olasky is the chair of that particular committee. Ms. Olasky, may we have the report of your committee this evening, please?
Sure. The Personnel Committee met once since the January board meeting, and we have 22 action items this month. There are two retirements, both at CTMS, and two resignations, both teaching assistants at CTMS and or Spruce Run. There are two amendments to prior action items 18-PN-091, 107, 148, 162, and 182 to reflect changes in employment start date for one employee, employment end date for one employee, and leave of absence end dates for three employees. There are several action items related to approvals of substitute teaching assistants, substitute lunch aide, substitute nurse, and substitute secretary for the current school year. There is an approval for theater manager payment for the February 3rd Hunterdon and Symphony event at CTMS. There is an approval for a student teacher at Spruce Run during spring 2018. There are two approvals for home instruction and one approval for teaching assistants to attend CTMS Art Club. There's an approval for a resolution related to increment withholding. And lastly, there are three approvals for leaves of absence, one at CTMS and two at Round Valley. With that, I'd like to put forth a motion for action items 18-PN-195 through 216.
Looking for a second, please?
I'll second.
Second, Mr. Malloy. Any questions for Mrs. Olasky this evening from the board? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky?
Yes.
Mrs. Rodaguda?
Yes.
Mrs. Brennan?
Yes.
Mrs. Brooks?
Yes.
Dr. Foy?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. Our final committee report is policy and curriculum. Mrs. McLaughlin is the chair of that particular committee. Mrs. McLaughlin, may we have your report, please?
Yes, the Policy and Curriculum Committee met last week. We had a surprise guest. Mr. Malloy was able to join us. He was so delighted he wants to come back to the Policy and Curriculum.
I'd say we have him every week.
Committee very soon after reading hours of policy. We spent a good deal of time reviewing the district calendar. As I previously stated in many board meetings, as we look at the calendar construction, we look at the contract to see what the obligated days of professional development are. We look at the start and end dates of the school year in relation to our facility usage, particularly the weather and the temperature. We look at the North Hunterdon calendar. There continues to be a discussion at roundtable of aligning all the sending districts to North's calendar. I recently attended a North Hunterdon roundtable executive committee where this discussion came up yet again. And the majority of the districts are not currently aligning to North for various reasons. One is that North Hunterdon continually decides to start earlier and earlier and earlier. And this year, their first day of school is August 23rd, I believe. And so we have chosen, along with several other school districts, not to align with North Hunterdon at this time. However, we do keep into consideration the days off for families so that we have similar vacation days. In addition to, we look at professional development days. They have recently gone back to using early dismissals. They previously were doing a delayed opening, which was not successful for the students in our district, so we are following their schedule when possible. So we think we have successfully, after much discussion, aligned the calendar with the appropriate number of days. And that is posted on will be posted tomorrow, I think, on our website. We have a first reading of a wellness and nutrition policy and a foster care and educational stability policy. We have reinstated our physical restraint policy. We are currently working on revising our policies and noted that that one was somehow omitted, and so it needs to be reinstated. And it was previously approved by the board, so it can go back to being reinstated without having to go through first or second readings. We have 5 field trips to approve tonight. We have our LLD resource and ABA classes going to Frank's Italian Pizza. We have our first graders going to the Turtleback Zoo. We have the Golden Eagle Singers participating in Great Adventure in a singing competition. We have our 8th graders studying physics again and roller coasters at Great Adventure. And we have our 2nd grade classes going to Merrill Creek, where hopefully Mr. V, they will not see a bear. And with that, that is my report.
Thank you.
I would like to move action items 18 PC 31 through 18 PC 34.
Second, Ms. Brooks. Any questions for Mrs. McLaughlin? Seeing none, may we have a roll call?
This question, Emery.
I'm sorry, we're going to have another public comment. Ms. Rush, if you can just wait till that'd be great. Thank you. May we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Olasky?
Yes.
Mrs. Rodaguda?
Yes.
Mrs. Brennan?
Yes.
Mrs. Brooks?
Yes.
Dr. Foy?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Thank you. I'd like to move on to report of our ad hoc committee on the feasibility of closing the school. Our committee met on February 8th, 2017, to continue the work of prior committee. That evening, we welcomed to our group 2 new members, Mrs. Brooks and Dr. Foy. During this meeting, we reviewed the past work and research conducted by this committee over the last few years. We reviewed demographic study, the drivers of enrollment, the capacity analysis and study of each building, options for utilizing existing building space as is, in addition to the pros and cons of utilizing that building space. We reviewed options for utilization under a district building consolidation instruction, the pros and cons of that consolidation program. We also looked at the past recommendations and next steps, and we looked at the triggers for consolidation. The committee then identified what had recently changed in our community, for example, low-income housing project, and the number of units to be built in the township relative to this low-income housing project. We also looked at the recent sale of the Merck complex to a large technology company called Unicom Global. And we looked at the lower enrollment numbers that was projected by our demographic study a couple years ago. It is unclear how these three pieces will play into the either reduction or stability or increase in our current enrollment. So we decided that we had to take the next few action items and we'll report out to the community by the end of 2018 definitive answer of what we will do. We're going to embark on a higher level demographic study to reevaluate with the pieces, the new pieces that I mentioned before, if that changes the demographic study at all. We will work with an expert to analyze the low income housing deal that the township signed to see what impact that may or may not have on our numbers in the future. We'll also continue to work on the cost study with Dave Hespy to look at if there's any cost savings with a consolidation. We'll finalize the seniority study for our staff that the district has embarked on this particular summer. We have also begun discussions with other districts in regards to district consolidation. We're also going to hire an engineer to evaluate the cost of connecting the Patrick McGarren school to a sewer and the capacity of that sewer line and what it can and cannot handle. We also evaluate the cost of that as well. So that is the report of our committee, and we will have something substantive to you in a decision at the end of June. I'd like to move on to old business of the board. Is there any old business that members of the board would like to bring up at this particular time? Nope, seeing none, I'd like to move on to new business, please. Any new business, Mrs. McLaughlin?
I have two items, they're somewhat related. I attended recently the Henderson County School Boards Association meeting with Ms. Olasky and Mrs. Brennan. There was a presentation done on the possibility of consolidating or regionalizing all schools in the North Hunterdon or the Hunterdon County area. Mr. Gagliardi was an esteemed member of the panel, and as was some of the people responsible for consolidating the South Hunterdon Regional School District, and they presented challenges. There are many challenges within the law in New Jersey that really preclude districts from consolidation. At the same time, I also attended the North Hunterdon Sending Districts have an executive council that's been meeting quarterly to talk about issues that are affecting all districts. We have started to look among districts with shared service agreements as well as collaborating among the schools. As everyone is aware, we have declining enrollment across New Jersey and in particular in Hunterdon County. Some schools have already taken the step of consolidation or regionalization in some capacities. The Hampton School District, for example, just recently signed an agreement with the Lebanon Township Schools to send their 7th and 8th graders to Lebanon Township.
Hampton, 6, 7, 8.
So I think it is 6, 6 7, 8, because they're continuing to shrink at an alarming rate. So we continue to meet with them to look at ways that we can utilize our resources, look at effective programs, and how we might be able to work with one another to share our resources.
Great, thank you. Anyone else have any new business? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to open the floor for our second recognition of the public. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone. State your name and address. We'll be limiting this section to 15 minutes. The same guidelines and parameters that I spoke about in the first public comment section apply here.
Downhill easier, the uphill
easier.
There
we go, downhill's always easier. Okay, bring this back down. Okay, Chris Rush, 7 Wedgwood Drive, Annandale, New Jersey. Like I said, I was younger, 2005, much younger, no glasses back then. All right. I have a question regarding the policy that the district has for providing parents with like if there was a situation in the school where children broke the rules in the, you know, the handbook. If we follow our handbook, we have the kids sign it, and we sign it. And I think each school has their own handbook, because obviously for age and all that good stuff. But just generally speaking, are we as parents allowed to know what repercussions there are for inappropriate behavior or for a certain, you know, rule breaking, if you've broken a rule in the handbook? Are we able to have knowledge of what, you know, if you do this, you know, this would happen. If you do this a second time, this would happen. Because I'm, and I don't know if I could, should wait for an answer or explain why I'm asking, or what would the board, does it matter? Should we, does it? Never done this before, obviously. Asking questions at the wrong time.
Are you asking for a discipline rubric?
No, I don't think. I'm confused. Unless that's what they call it now. They might call it that now. It's, everything's got a name. But I...
So like first offense, second offense?
Yeah, I guess. I just... I'm concerned because I feel like there are some behaviors going on. I guess I'll just explain myself, and then you guys can decide if that's worthy of, you know, able, capable, allowed, legal. There's some behaviors going on at the middle school where kids have been caught breaking the rules. And the decision was made to have the entire school population follow certain protocol now regarding the cell phone specifically. But it's something that's happened over the years that I've been present in the school with other things, so that's why I'm now asking. But the whole school was put and made aware, and parents were made aware that the cell phones would now always be in the lockers and away and off until the end of the day. And the reasoning was because there were children using the phones inappropriately in appropriate times, which, of course, I support. Something has to be done. My main concern with that was that that it was a small population of kids doing that. They are aware of the kids who did it. Again, you can't tell who's going to do it tomorrow, of course, or next week. You don't know what's coming. But my concern is that, one, that the whole school was then put on a certain protocol based on small population. I can't say I agree with that, even though I know it was for safety reasons for the kids. And then my other issue with it is that, see the old age setting in. But I guess I would just say that I'm curious. I wanted to say that I don't think we know when anyone would do something to that nature wrong. What happens? And I'm not saying I want to know who did it, or I don't, you know, need a whole specific thing. But for my kids specifically, and I think for most parents, we know the situation happened. You know, the district made us aware that things were happening. What is the protocol moving forward? Even though now the kids' phones are in their lockers in a way, there are always going to be people who choose to do what they want to do anyway. What can I say to my child to say, listen, your phone needs to be in your locker. If it's found not in your locker and you've done something inappropriate, like what this will be. I think part of the problem at the middle school anyway is that there's not really clarity. There's just a jump to let's just fix the hole. You know, let's just put a stop to the hole so that we can avoid these smaller incidents, these minority incidents. And I just feel like that's part of the problem right now with the whole energy that's going on in our kids and in the age groups that I'm specifically dealing with. And I just would like to know if you're allowed to let us know what repercussions are there for breaking the rules.
Thank you.
A lot of energy for late at night. Am I done now?
Yeah.
Is that it? Sorry. Yeah, I'm good. Done. Bye. Let me just do this, because definitely they'll be taller.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Faith Furman, 3 Cobblestone Lane in Annandale. And I just, even though the crowd has dwindled, I want to thank everybody for coming. And I wanted to speak earlier, but everyone was so much more eloquent. But I really feel like you're offended, And I feel like there are people in the crowd that were offended, and that's too bad. We shouldn't end the night like that. I just want to say, you know, especially after last week down in Florida, I think there's this very acute awareness among the people in the schools of, you know, very real danger. And we come every day and we smile, and the day after we came back after that event, a little girl came in her wings, in her little fairy costume, and that kind of made everything okay. She had no idea, you know, and that's, we want to keep it that way as much as possible. And it's very hard to work under those conditions. And I think what you're sensing from this particular group in the green shirts, I got to tell you, I hate this. I don't look good in green. It's just not my color. So I know you're having to look at them. But we're here and we're wearing them, and we don't want to offend, but we also feel very stressed, you know, that we're working really hard. And earlier in the evening, you were in the cafeteria, and the majority of the teachers have been there more than 10 years. You know, we've put our heart and soul into this community, and I've been here for 24 years. So I will echo those changes that I think we're all aware of. Some of them are coming from other places, but we have a desire to get this done, and that's really the major message. And I want to also say, you know, I came for the Relay for Life. I don't have kids in the district anymore. They're grown. But I was so impressed. They were wonderful. And I know, Dr. Fiander, you hadn't seen that before. And, you know, I listened to a girl sing. I listened to poetry. I listened to a young girl talk about her mother passing away, you know, how the poise. And I'm watching the teenagers down in Florida and how poised they are. I think our kids are great. And they're our future. And I just want us to come together. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
I'd like to ask Dr. Fiander to address Mrs. Rush's comments from a moment ago, please. Dr.
Hi, Mrs. Fiander. Rush. A couple of things. You started with, do we know the consequences? Right when I arrived in the district in August and September, the board was voting on the student code of conduct, and it does outline a rubric-like of offenses and what takes place. So that we can make public. If it's not on the website, I'll see that you can get access to it. And number two, regarding cell phone usage, I would love to quiz Mrs. Grand as to how many times a day I either write or call or text her about student incidents. And some of them are very challenging. Some of them are very sad. And all of them I get from her, there are no words. So we deal with really, really challenging things that children bring from home. I don't mean bring stuff, but they're social emotional. And I do have to speak to, I think, the teachers and the staff and the nurses and the child study team work overtime to attend to those. And I think the people in this room, if you had the composite view that I have and I share daily with Mrs. Grant, you would be stunned, because I remain stunned at what some of our children are dealing with. That said, okay, well, you're
Let's
a mom.
Let's not get into a back and forth.
Right.
Excuse me, we're not going to get into back and forth. I'm sorry, it's not part
of
the policy.
Let me speak to the cell phone. Again, we've had many incidents of students doing, look, they're emerging adolescents, and they don't know whether to drive a truck or play with one, and they make really bad decisions, and the phones have been a big challenge. And we are navigating that with what's important as far as security, and we're working with Lieutenant Byrd. But on balance, we felt, given the nature of some of the things they're doing, because they are actually crossing over the line with some of their behaviors, that it's becoming law enforcement stuff, and we're trying to protect them. So we don't have the final answer on this, but we continue to work on it. And finally, one of the things that drives parents crazy, and I get it, we cannot explain to you what we did to Phil Stern because of what he did. It's so confidential, and we hope that you will trust that Phil got his just reward, and we're taking care of that. So I'll be sure that the code of conduct's online, and I also welcome a conversation with you offline about the cell phone usage. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McManus, can you please read the executive session statement?
Whereas while the Senator Byron N. Baer Open Public Meetings Act requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education to be held in public, NJSA 10 Section 4-12B sets forth 9 types of matters that may lawfully be discussed in executive session without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10 Section 4-12B to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during an executive session, whereas any pending or anticipated litigation or contract negotiation in which the public body is or may be a party, any matters falling within the attorney-client privilege to the extent that confidentiality is required in order for the attorney to exercise his ethical duties as a lawyer, the nature of the matter described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality, reviewing hearing information before the board pursuant to NJSA 18A-37, Section 13-2, the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights Act, the attorney-client privilege, personnel, and negotiations. Whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 60 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for only the above stated matters. Further, be it resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as the reason for confidentiality no longer exists. Action may be taken upon return.
Thank you, Mr. McManus. May I have a motion, please, to go into executive session?
Motion.
Motion, Dr. Second. Foy. Second, Mrs. Olasky. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? We are in executive session.
In favor? Really?
Kevin and Melissa?
Yeah,
good to go.
Cold medicine and
ladies and gentlemen, I'm looking for a motion to reconvene the meeting.
Motion. Second.
I knew it.
Third.
Knew it. Okay.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Meeting is reconvened. I'm now looking for a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions. Meeting is adjourned.
I wonder if anybody ever listens to this.